Yeah, this is better. So, yeah, I'll talk about history, how we made some decisions we made, some things regarding Lambda and the project, and basically this was kind of a point where we started to do most of the stuff on our own. Then I will go over the patterns that were kind of influenced for the libraries, so CQRS and event sourcing. I'll briefly show how the whole thing works in architecture, diagrams, and then I will say why we actually decided to open source it. So the project started 2019. Everyone wanted to use serverless. It was kind of a fancy thing to do at that time. And also, we wanted everything to be managed by Amazon. And we didn't want to monitor containers or run stuff around. We just want to give our code to Amazon and run it. And Lambda was kind of perfect to do this. We also had to keep the business logic vendor independent. So this is kind of a regulatory requirement. So we kind of picked that our business logic is the most valuable thing. And then we isolated it from the infrastructure. And so the infrastructure part we can always rewrite, but the business logic we want to reuse. We want a simple API, so I hated all these query paths, headers, discussions we always had about API, so I wanted to drop this thing out. And we wanted to keep data so we can transfer it, rewrite the library and move it to another language and use the same data and so on. So like binary stored messages in Kafka queues were not an option for us. With Lambda, basically the big problem is the startup. So we wanted to use Clojure because we had lots of data stuff to take care of. So the biggest problem was, of course, the startup. So the GraalVM at that time was pretty new, and basically most of the stuff didn't compile. We tried AWS SDK. This was a mess inside. And was they bring like half of the Maven repository back to it when you use it. Also, we had like Hackerit CPA, we had to fork it as well because there was some stuff there that they were using that didn't compile as well. Even Logback didn't compile for till like 1 year ago with this as well. So then we decided to build something on our own to make it simple. So we created our own AWS SDK because everything they do in all this magical SDK is kind of a post request to the AWS. So it was kind of super easy in the end to do. So the first pattern we chose to use was CQRS. Yeah, it's just a command and queries segregation pattern. So the idea is that you have a place where you send the commands, where you mutate data, and you have a place where you query stuff. And this kind of influenced our implementation. So we had on HTTP site, we just had two endpoints, commands and queries. You send in the body everything you want to do in the system, which also make you can take the same body, you can send it to the queue, you can send it in and batch of the command in S3 buckets. So this was kind of great because we could just store the commands from the post request, put them in the queue, or store them in S3 bucket as a list of commands. So it was super practical. The query side is also very simple, so just the query endpoint, which made the front-end client. We implemented our own front-end client for this. It was 300 lines of code together with it mocking, with retries, with deduplication, with everything. So basically, just simply having this simplicity on the HTTP side made it possible. Together with CQRS, nicely comes the event sourcing. So the idea of event sourcing is just we will not store the current state of the system. We will store events that happened. So it is a pattern from 1970, basically. But then they didn't have enough resources to do it. So they decided to invent like a relational database model where you just store the current state. So the event sourcing will be, for example, if you take a shopping cart as an example, you would, instead of storing the current item in the shopping cart, you would store item added, item removed, item added, and then when the clients ask what is my shopping cart, you go over the events and figure out what is the current state of the shopping cart. But the nice advantage of this is that everything is stored. So basically, for us, it's very important, the audit logs. Basically, with event sourcing, they are naturally there. Everything is stored. The database itself is immutable, so we are just appending stuff forward. So it's quite easy to handle from the security perspective and permission perspective and so on. So for our implementation, we have chosen to take Postgres. We just store our events as a JSONB fields with some metadata around. So it was super simple. We have transactions. Because it's just append only, it scales very well. So we have around 1 terabyte of data, and we just add. We don't even think about adding new stuff there. We use optimistic locking. So on the client side, we just add sequence to every event, and basically unique field on the Postgres gives us optimistic locking. So it was super easy to do. So yeah, this is a simple diagram. So from the client perspective, how things look like. So we have a command coming into the system, and there we touch our service, which is EDD Core implementation. EDD Core does four things. So takes a snapshot from the view store, then does the processing, whatever needs to be done, stores the response in event store, and basically sends to the router all the events effects that were created. So events are, as I said, something that will store the changes, and the effects are the things that need to be distributed to the other services. So if you want to call service B, I will never call it directly. I will store it in the database, the things I want to send to the other service, and then they will be distributed by router. The router then sends also back to the service that needs to update this aggregate, and then aggregate is updated to view store, and then we go to the next cycle. And query is just a simple query, goes to the view store, returns back data to the client. And one more diagram, which is also important, is the how internally EDD Core works. So basically it does a couple of things. In the beginning, we validate the request. The important thing is what we do, we check if there was already this request processed. So we have a command response log where we check if the request was processed. If not, then we log this request in the request log. So all the entry commands that come to the system are stored there. So if we need to debug something later on, everything is collected there. So, and since everything is a body, it's super easy to store, whether it comes from queue, post request, whatever. Then is this processing request, where is the business logic part. And then we start the transaction. So we can start the transaction at the very end of the request, which is quite nice from performance perspective. We store events, store effects, so the commands to the other services, and then we just mark this request as completed so that we have a deduplication afterwards. Well, basically, that's it. So we started developing this internally. It was only meant as an internal library. There was no open sourcing process in the company at all, so basically, this was kind of an idea to start this process as well. There was no alternative implementation because we have a fixed infrastructure there, so we kind of used this as an opportunity to kind of expand the library as well. So we mostly started using it as hobby projects, so for the side projects, so added the DynamoDB support, for example, for the store as well, for the event store. And this helped to clean up the project, so we did a big round of cleanup of the project with the proper abstractions, basically, and we started adding the different implementations. And then we were contributing the changes back to the internal, so which also helped the internal project. So we fixed a huge amount of bugs outside that help also to get them back internally for the internal implementation and so on. So we set up the open sources project, open sourcing process, so basically any team in the whole company can open source what they want if you just follow these steps. Yeah, so we had very positive experience with this library, so we are now like almost 1 year in production. We store everything. This pays off on daily basis. So we even had a business site messing up thousands of hundreds of thousands of records. We could recover them quite easily, just querying data from database. Everything is stored there. Audit was super happy because we stored everything. It even ticked off half of the audit just because we said we store everything. So they were super happy. And yeah, said so the most of the stuff, like if we had a production bug that basically clogged up the queues, we could clean up the queues. And 5 minutes later, we could just select what happened and recover it back in the queue. So we didn't have to worry about finding what was there in that letter queue, what is useful, what is not useful. So, and because of deduplication, we didn't have to worry about sending again some messages. So we do this almost every week. We have one disaster we need to recover, and it's super easy for us to do that. Yeah, that's it from my side. Questions?
So tell us a bit more about accepting open source in your company. You can come on.
So this was actually 6 months process. So
repeat the question.
So the question was the experience with setting up the open sourcing process in the company. So this was actually a very painful experience. So it took 6 months negotiation with security, actually first to understand what we want to do, then explain why we want to do, then talk to management, tell them why this is beneficial. But afterwards, yeah, once we figured out that all the rules that we need to follow, then it was quite straightforward. So we documented everything, and but it was 6 months process to get it there. So one side was because we had a burst. So we like, sorry. The question is why we decided to use Lambda functions. So basically in the beginning, we had a burst of data. So for example, in the morning, we would get a bunch of data we need to process, and the rest of the day, the system would process like 3 requests per hour. So, and this was kind of a nice thing because it scales quite fast. And the other motivation was because it forces kind of doing stuff clean. There's no caching. You have to really think about what you do. So it kind of wants to push the developers to go in the direction of actually making stuff clean and that they don't depend on something being stored somewhere in memory. And yeah, the third thing was it was a cool thing to do. So it was kind of nice presentation, marketing material for the project as well.
So I mentioned you use optimistic locking. Why
yes.
Did you decide to use it? Was it because of Dynamo DB or was it?
So the question is why we do the optimistic locking. So we use actually Postgres in the beginning, but we use the optimistic locking because we didn't want to even start the transaction because until we are done. So because we kind of declare all the dependencies we have, we fetch them, we process the data, and then we have everything we need to store the mutated database. We have it at the end. So that then we open the transaction and then we can do something. So. That means we fetch the aggregate, for example, aggregate version 72. We process everything. We say, okay, now we'll be version 73. And if there's some version 73 in between happening, then we would have a Postgres nicely saying us there's a concurrency problem. So we didn't want to lock anything in database. We just want to make it simple. So this was super easy to implement.
That might become a rate limiter in the future.
Yes.
Actually, I have a comment on that, which is, our database uses optimistic concurrency control, and it actually gives much better scaling up than the traditional locking methods, and it's much more robust and it's more secure. So we can have a separate discussion about this later.
Yes, let's have it. This will be an interesting discussion.